The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Jeff Gross Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We've got a fantastic show. Lots to talk about. Joe Messa is in the house from Messa and Associates. How are you, Joe?
I'm great, Joe. Thanks for having me, man. Good to see you.
It's always a pleasure. And, of course, our host, Jeff Gross. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Joe. Thanks for doing this. And, Joe, thanks for doing this. Two Joes.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I've known both you guys a long time. So
We got a lot to talk about. And Penn Charter guy, right?
No, you're the Penn Charter guy. Speaking of which, Joe.
He's not a Penn Charter guy.
No.
I know he's not a Penn Charter guy. I know he's a Chestnut Hill guy.
Speaking of which, I was at the Chestnut Hill homecoming game on Saturday where they slaughtered Lawrenceville and are now 4-0 going into the Interact schedule. Maybe their year.
Maybe it may be their year. I want to bring in a DJ Kepler of Covered Bridge Capital. How are you, DJ?
I'm doing well, Joe. Thank you.
So Covered Bridge is sponsoring this special broadcast because Jeff Gross is also on next week. And so we're ecstatic to be here at WWDB Talk 860. Matt Minarek is our producer. One of the things we like to do, and we're going to go around the horn and get, you know, talk about everybody's firm and business and all that, but talk a little sports before we get into all that stuff, okay? And certainly, by the way, I thought you were going to say they beat Penn Charter. I'm like, man, what bad timing that would be.
No, Penn Charter's next week at Penn Charter.
I might just take I might stop up and see that.
Joe's having a whole tailgate there.
Well, I don't want to say this too loud, but when they asked me to leave, and it was respectful, I don't hold any grudges. I think they still have, you know, there's still security up there, but I'll get through it. But let's talk about a little sports, little Eagles. Everybody saw the game, right, DJ?
Yeah, we're in mourning.
Yep. So, unfortunately, it was a rough day yesterday, Joe.
Whoa. I mean, so... take on it, Joe Messer, if you would.
So, I mean, they weren't prepared to play. The offense, you know, couldn't move the ball. I think only giving Saquon the ball 10 times, they got behind quick because of the defense. I think the game planning by Vic Fangio was poor and they didn't adjust at all. They should have known based on the condition of the Bucs offensive line that they were going to have Baker Mayfield try to get the ball out quickly, rhythm, short passes, which they did. We weren't able to get any pressure because of that. And then more importantly, when you're doing that, you let them catch the 2-3-4 yard pass, tackle. We couldn't tackle all day. That killed us.
No doubt. Jeff Gross.
Yeah, and if I hear one more complaint about how hot it was there, I'm going to blow my mind.
Well, that's because it wasn't hot. It was 70 degrees on Tampa Bay side of the field at all times. See, they didn't have to play in the same, you know, gook that we did. Oh, okay, it's being sarcastic.
They did not look like they were having a problem with the heat, Tampa.
Where'd you watch the game, DJ?
I watched it at home, and I would say the biggest thing I took away was they didn't take advantage of any momentum. Anytime they had any kind of, like we talked about before we jumped on the air here, when they returned that block kick.
Yeah.
That should have been a turning point in the game.
And it kind of was until we got to the 30-yard line about to go in. And that is what you saw, you know, Dallas Goedert. Now, look, he's catching 7 balls and you know, for leading receiver, I don't know how many yards. But here's the deal. I remember I coached high school and I was talking to my 2 running backs. I was the running backs coach. And they both fumbled consecutively. And I was being sarcastic. I said, fellas, I definitely want is to fumble. I want it. But not right in a row, okay? You know, Goddard is wide open, okay? He's 7 for, I don't know how many the targets he had, but he's got 7 to 8 or 9 targets. He drops 1 in his hands. The only one.
One of the most important ones.
Yeah, exactly. So there's 7. He misses the first one. And the whole momentum changes. But I'd like to talk about Hurts. Now, I thought about this yesterday. I thought maybe I would love to get his film from, you know, the year before when he was second in the MVP, okay? And the urgency...
22.
What's that?
2022.
I'd like to compare that film to what's going on now, because it's almost like you said, Joe, before we started this broadcast. Yeah, and Jeff, I know what you meant by that. You got to protect the ball. But he's holding on to it in that pocket like he's got 2 hours. It's almost like he's got no pocket awareness at all.
Way too long.
Yeah, he's holding
jumping
way too
back
long.
There. He's feeling pressure that's not there. He's not being comfortable, stepping up, seeing his receivers, making throws. He's got no pocket awareness. What
do you think he, and this sounds a little wacky, but do you think he has the yips? Like, in other words, that's, you know, a baseball player that's not, you know, and I don't mean yips throwing, because he clearly can throw, although you wouldn't know, some of those balls were drifting like those, but he does not look like the same player after the money that he was before it.
He doesn't, and I think that's a good explanation for it, having the yips when he's in the pocket. He's, like, feeling pressure that's not there. He's getting jumpy. He's not seeing open receivers. He's holding the ball too long. There's just, he's not comfortable back there when there are many times he has a clean pocket and plenty of time to step up and throw the ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
He needs to do short passes, slants, and then give it to Barkley.
Yeah.
Barkley's an asset. I don't know why we don't use him more.
Well, one of the problems is when you're down that, when you lose this, or by the way, Jeff, just so you know, you're not in a little chair, you know, there's a bar on the right side. You must have accidentally hit it because it was happening. You can stand up. You got it. It'll go up. I thought they were tricking me every time I came in here. I was always in the... I was like driving in a car, right?
I think, but you gave Jeff the clown chair.
I did.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm on a little ride here.
That's right. It's like when you go into a business and you put the guy in a little chair and you're standing up there like that.
Power
but,
trip.
But having said that, but you can, all that, and then the defense. Now, if we learned one thing last week against New Orleans, we're definitely going to be stepping up. Mother of God, what the hell happened?
Night and day. The difference between the defense the week before and this week, I mean, and
there is
you
no
had
defense
the same,
yesterday.
Same players, same lineup, no pressure from the edge, and I think they neutralized Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis by only running outside. They weren't running between the tackles, and the short, quick passes, getting the ball out.
Well, when I look at, you know, our scheme, first of all, it could have been 28-0. That kid doesn't drop that ball in the end zone.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking we're looking at a 50-point game here. The way things were going,
I thought in this beginning of the third quarter, I thought we had a chance of coming back, believe it or not.
After that,
I was getting some
Alabama
hope.
Game, I thought the same thing.
Was getting right. some hope. Yeah.
Well, I mean, as we're driving, like we were right. talking about, once when Hurts stayed in that pocket so long.
Yeah.
Okay. And even though when he runs, he even looks slower when he runs, even though, when he started running, and when he was running in 22, he was like hauling. Even now, he's smooth, and so he's faster than he looks.
But he does have the wherewithal to get rid of it, but, you know, get out of the pocket and get rid of it. But how many sacks did he have? 5, 6?
Was it? Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
I think it was 5, but it's the decision-making, right?
Yeah.
Make a decision. See your receiver, second, third. If they're not there, pull the ball down, run. It's all the hesitation.
One of the things that I think it was you, Joe, that mentioned at the before we came on air, and I – not having those short, easy underneath passes. Like, in other words, you gotta, you know, if you know, we're throwing these outside sideline patterns, right? We need to have safety valves, like easy, high percentage passes that you can just. By the way, last year, same exact. It was even worse last year. Now look, it's early. We got a break, a break or bye week. But let me, you know, it's bizarre. And I guess having a bye week this early in the season, which we need it more than anything, one thing we haven't talked about is all of our injured players, but bottom line is they weren't on defense, they're on offense.
That's true. I mean, hopefully the bye week between that, getting injured players back other than Lane Johnson on the offensive line, and trying to re-scheme and get things right with the coaching staff and get ready for the next game, hopefully that makes a difference. I think the first 2 weeks after the bye are going to be a real story for our season. We're going to see.
No question.
It's almost like the Phillies. I mean, if the Phillies don't know how to play small ball, You know, they're always swinging for the fences.
Well, it's funny. Okay, so what a segue. Jeff Gross, we talked about this last night.
But doesn't that go to coaching on it both does. Football it does. And baseball, right?
That's why people are calling for Sirianni's head.
Well, the thing about Sirianni, I mean, and look, we're on talk radio and we're in Philly. This ain't sports talk, but what, you know what? It's I did a show a couple years ago called Fans Interference, which I created, right? So this is like that. Like, we're fans and we're kind of vetting. But guess what? If Sirianni, well, you know, those lack of kicking field goals, and at the end of the game, having it bite us in the butt, okay, making this, you know, you go for it when the situation, you don't just flip a coin, because you could see him at the, it's the beginning of the game, he's flipping a coin. There's no strategy involved. He's like, I think we can make it. What? You know, so he's kicking when he should be punting, and he's going for it when he should be kicking. And it's costing. And you heard Jimmy Johnson on the post on the halftime show. He's going, what is going on here? Like, I mean, I'm not a, you know, I mean, Jimmy Johnson is, I mean, he's Dallas Cowboys, but guess what? He's right. You got to have some sort of, you know, take the points type thing.
Yeah, and that's not just limited to this week. We had
that last week.
I'm talking about last week.
Yeah, last week was ridiculous. They should have gone for the field goal twice.
Oh.
It would have been, we would have gotten three field goals and been up 9 points last week, and would have been in much better shape.
Yeah, and
but this week, making decisions to go for it on fourth down in your own territory at the beginning of the game, you're just making things worse.
It's ridiculous. You know, first, okay, before we go on to the Phillies, because Jeff and I talked late last night, he's like, he said, look, you say this, and then I'll say, it's like baseball.
Right.
You look at what's going on, okay, and you look at these. What do you think about the kickoff? I think it's the most ridiculous thing.
I hate it. It's horrible. The new kickoff rule. It's a waste of. I mean, it's just you're on the 30-yard line, and I don't understand. For example, when it's late in the game, which has happened to us, and you need to run those few seconds off the clock.
Why aren't
like
you
in
kicking
that Falcons
it in?
Game? Why aren't you kicking it on to the 5-yard
right.
line? Let the clock run.
Squib it.
And it seems like every time that's done, they get shorter than the 30-yard line. They wind up getting tackled on the 20 or the 18 or the 24.
Exactly.
Why not?
Because your guys
that?
Are there.
Time on the clock.
They're right there.
But I hate the rule. I hate the new kickoff.
It's ridiculous. I was watching college football Saturday, thinking, "Wow, this is the way it should be." You know,
were a lot of guys getting hurt on onside kicks or something? Because I never, onside kicks are situations where you can't run all the way down the field. But this situation where you're automatically getting it on a 30, okay, that's one thing. So why aren't you squibbing it? Okay. And then if you're going to do that, move the kicker back 10 yards so we can't reach it. Right. You know, it's just nuts.
I hope this is just a 1-year experiment.
It's got to be.
Because the way the rule was before, it was fine. I don't understand that there were that many injuries on kickoffs. And the other thing, I think the new rule is, it's silly, is you can't even try an onside kick until the end of the game, and you have to tell them it's in advance. So the other team already knows you're doing it.
It's ridiculous. It really is.
It's got to end. I've never seen anything like it. Okay. What was that, Jeff?
It's got to end. It's got to stop.
Speaking of gotta stop, how about the Phillies? Okay,
they gotta go.
They gotta keep going.
They gotta keep going. I'm worried about a bye.
Exactly. I said stop. I meant the opposite. But how about, first of all, I just want to say, I wrote something on Facebook because I don't vet a lot, but sometimes I just have to. And my wife, and I was sitting there watching the game with my wife. I just gotta, you know. So I and this a couple times a year, but here's what I said about the Phillies. Normally, when you're got the top record in baseball, you're scared to death to take that week off. It's, you know, you want the bye, you fight for the bye, and then you're like, oh, we're going to lose the momentum. Sure. We ain't got to worry about that, okay? We don't have to worry about losing our momentum.
They did win yesterday.
Did you see the last play of the game? Did you see that last at bat? He almost hit a grand slam. He was 2 feet from it. We almost lost the game.
That's true.
It's crazy how much different the team looks, especially the pitching, from the first half of the season to the second half. Like Ranger Suarez, can you, you know, rely on bringing him in as your fourth starter in the playoffs. Now, you don't have to worry about that in the first series. It's only five games. And to me, no question, Chris Sanchez is your third starter.
No question.
I hope they don't try to march Ranger out there.
They're not going to.
Third starter. But what about when you need him? Hopefully you get past the first series in the NLCS series and hopefully in the World Series. Like, what do you do?
Well, at the baseball.
Certainly not Taiwan Walker. I would go crazy if they try to march him out there.
I'd take Ranger over Taiwan all day, yeah.
Of course.
I think I might go with Turnbull.
Okay.
Oh, well, let me just say this. I would be nervous if the Phillies were playing, you know, like a, you know, kind of like an exhibition against Chestnut Hill Academy or Penn Charter or Roman or whoever, if they were throwing Taiwan out on the mound, because something clearly that, you know, that guy, he was an all-star. He played, this is his 12th year in the majors. So he clearly, but I went to the Baseball Hall of Fame, I guess, with my wife and my son a couple years ago. And on above one of the displays, it says a marathon and a sprint. And that's what baseball is. A season full of the marathon, 162 games, and the sprint starts in a week. Today's consequential, as we know. But I mean, we got the worst record in baseball after the break and of all the teams in the playoffs. So hopefully we pick it up, and injuries in both football and baseball are they determine a lot of the outcomes. So
I hope it's not another last year's Eagles ending.
That's for sure. I mean, I'm a little bit optimistic, you know, about the fact that the last few years that the Phillies have made it in the playoffs, they've really turned it on in the playoffs. It's like their play was risen, you know, they rose their play up to another level
right. In
the playoffs. I hope they can do that here and get right with this week layoff.
Absolutely. So listen, let's get into a little bit of the reason why we're here. Let's go around the horn a little bit about our ourselves as professionals and our firms. Jeff Gross, if you will, sir.
So I handle all work-related injury claims and workers' compensation claims representing injured workers that have been injured at work who can no longer perform the functions of their jobs, and I've been doing this for 35 years. Got my start from Joe Mesa. Joe Mesa handed me my first workers' compensation case, which I would love to talk to you about later.
Oh, we are definitely going to talk about that. You and I have talked about it.
My firm is Gross & Kenny. We are four lawyers and a bunch of support staff, and we fight really hard for the injured worker.
Fantastic. Joe Mesa, about yourself and the firm?
So unlike Jeff, I do not do workers' comp. So if you have a workers' comp case, call Jeff Gross. I do every kind of injury case out there other than workers' comp. So we do represent injured workers who are hurt on the job site that have a third-party claim against a general contractor, a product manufacturer, some third party that can be sued. We also do medical malpractice, product liability cases, really, you know, car accidents, every kind of case where someone's injured other than workers' comp. Call Jeff for that. But in terms of even workers' comp and what I do, there is a synergy when someone's hurt on a job site or in a work-related injury with the workers' comp lawyer like Jeff and me or the lawyers that work for me, because we're working together to try to get the best result for that injured person, both in a third-party context as well as workers' comp, and that synergy and communication is important in those cases.
And when we're talking to our listeners in layman's terms, when you get injured on the job, if it's some other company's, somebody from some other company's fault and not your own, because workers' comp is no fault, that's where the third-party element comes in, correct?
Right. Another contractor that works for another company, a general contractor, the site owner, anybody involved, could be architects, engineers, anybody involved with a job other than your specific employer.
DJ Kepler, if you would, a little bit about yourself and Cover Bridge Capital.
Sure. So Cover Bridge Capital supports both of their types of clients. We do any kind of injury case as well as workers' comp claims. And we provide financial assistance to clients who are waiting for their case to settle. So a lot of times clients will get hurt, whether they're on the job or in any kind of generic accident, and they won't be able to pay their bills. You know, bills are still coming in, but they can't work due to their injuries from the accident. So that's when Coverbridge Capital comes in, and we provide these clients with an advance on their settlement. And then when the case settles, we get paid back directly out of the settlement. and it's on a non-recourse basis. So if the client loses their case or if it gets dropped for some reason, they don't owe us the money back.
And so one of the things, because you were on a recent show and kind of attracted to me, but and first of all, Joe, in your world, these cases do not just settle overnight, no matter how many, you know, you're one of the most successful attorneys in the region, but the insurance companies certainly, no matter how obvious it seems, are not, you know, emptying the coffers just because somebody was catastrophically injured at somebody else's fault. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the cases we handle are catastrophic injury cases. So someone has a severe injury, an amputation, a spinal cord injury, a brain injury, the kinds of things, paralysis, the kinds of things that are going to impact someone for a lifetime. And the values of those cases dictate that the case be worked up properly and fully, and every case is prepared for trial. The way to maximize a recovery for the client is to prepare the case for trial, and that puts the client in a situation where you're more likely to get a case resolved if it doesn't go to trial for the actual real full value of the case. That takes time. When you're talking about complex cases, depending on where you are, I mean, it's a 4 to 5 year process. So
I always wondered how people make it through if they're really destitute in those situations, okay, and workers' comp. It's almost like, you know, the insurance companies want to smoke these people out no matter
how
injured.
That's exactly the plan.
That's it. So they can get them to settle cheap, wave a little bit of money in front of them when they're desperate, like you're talking about. And I'm sure we've all had clients, Jeff and I have both had clients like that, like, I'm in a bad situation, take the money. We need to take the money, and you need to do something because you want to try to help them maximize the value of their claim and not resolve their case for too little money that's going to put them in a bad situation a few years down the road.
That's right. They can't afford the rest of their life, and they may never go. Is that a scenario?
Every day, yeah.
The workers' compensation does help because it gives them ongoing income during the pendency of this. And what ends up happening is we hold off in making any settlement until the third-party case comes to fruition as a strategy. So that way, they maximize the value of the workers' comp claim, and then the lien created by the workers' compensation claim for the workers' comp carrier becomes much larger, and then Joe will be able to use that towards his advantage in creating a much larger third-party result.
But often, especially if they try to handle things on their own,
I don't think that's an option.
A claim petition, right?
Yeah, that's not an option.
Right. It's not an option if you want to be successful, because so many people have gotten toyed with in this world.
Of course.
And that literally speaking, I mean, it gets serious, man.
Many times they don't come to me until after they've been screwed with by the insurance company. They think that they're getting paid, everything's fine, and then lo and behold, they get whacked with an IME, an independent medical evaluation, which is not so
independent. There's nothing independent about it.
Exactly.
Nothing independent about it.
And that bangs them over the head, and then we have to scramble.
Let me ask you, and we've had this, and I learned a lot. I always wondered that, like how it's such a scary thought. I just, you know, you love your family, you want to be able to provide your injured. And like you said, Joe, some of these cases, just by the very nature, what's the saying that, you know, insurance companies are in the business of taking premiums, not paying out settlements, so they go to the distance, right? And they destroy people's lives in the process. And I saw your recent commercial. I love that commercial about the little kid who, what was his finger?
Her. The girl who had part of her pinky amputated, yeah.
And they just kind of laughed at you and said, you know, this is a joke or something. And
the defense lawyer called me and said, ha, 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 what's this case worth, $30,000? It's a pinky. And I said, at the end of this case, you're going to pay me 7 figures. And laughed again. Ha, 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 never happened. So
okay,
it took
now,
a few years. But
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. But as obvious as it seems, okay, you know, the dignity that's taken from these people who go through these things, in your world, Jeff, I mean, it happens almost instantaneously because their benefits, you know, they need them. Their pay, all those things, just because they've been working for somebody for 10 years doesn't mean that somebody's going to, have mercy on them because they work hard and they got injured on the job.
It's irrelevant because the insurance company that's paying the claim doesn't care how long the employee has worked there. They only care to save themselves money in not paying the claim.
So, DJ, in your world, okay, you can help that process along.
Yeah. So, in Jeff's
case, you would said to me before on that last show, it's not the first option.
No, no, no. Yeah, you want to explore every other option before you borrow funds because it is expensive to borrow. And we were, I was actually at the Philly Bench Bar. I was actually saw Joe there on this past week, and there were several defense attorneys there. And for some reason, I had a magnet on my back asking me every single question about funding and why we fund and all this other stuff. And the defense attorney said, why don't they just go to the bank and borrow, get a loan? I said, well, these clients can't just go to the bank and have their cases, you know, collateral. So, you know, we're really a
last option.
Because
if you go to the bank, you're paying it back no matter what, right?
Yeah, and a lot of times these people don't have any income because they're injured. So it's really hard to get a loan if you, you know, don't have any, you know, income or a good credit score or anything like that. So, you know, we're really a solution for those types of people.
DJ is not really giving them a loan. He's funding them.
Correct.
And if they're successful, then he gets paid back. If they're not successful, if the case fails for whatever reason, and it's no fault of the individual that causes the case to fail,
right,
then, you know, DJ doesn't get paid back.
Unfortunately, even if it is the fault of the client that they lose their case, we still don't get paid back.
Well, I'm saying if they sabotage their own case.
That's true.
So having said that, now it's just it's an interesting
But a good discussion. Example of something like this is the very first case that I had from Joe when I was working with Joe. I worked with Joe many years ago. 1991.
You say this.
You're making me feel old, Jeff.
Yeah.
But we had this case.
Joe, if I had my nightclub, you'd be getting carded. I'm just telling you.
Nice. I wish.
We had this case where a guy, and I don't know, I'm going to refresh your memory. You tell me if you remember this, Joe. A guy was a tractor-trailer driver over the road, which means he was not local. He was traveling long distance and would get a bonus if he got from point A to point B faster. And so he was assigned to drive a truck from Golden, Colorado to New York City. He lived in either Cheltenham or Mount Airy or somewhere like that in Philly. And he was on Route 80. And while he was driving his tractor trailer, he tried to make it in one fell swoop from Golden, Colorado to New York City because he would get this big bonus. He didn't want to stop and sleep, but he was exhausted. And as he was driving, he kind of dozed off and unfortunately went off the road and went down an embankment, ruined the entire payload of the truck, which was, can you guess what kind of beer? Coors beer. And as a result, it suffered extensive multiple injuries, was airlifted to Penn, University of Pennsylvania Hospital, where he had multiple surgeries, and they denied his claim. And Joe said to me on a Friday, what do you know about workers' compensation? And I said, nothing. What is it? He said, it's when someone gets hurt at work and they get benefits. Here's three volumes of Purdon's Title 77, which is the statute that goes over all of the workers' compensation law in Pennsylvania. He said, take these home and read them over the weekend. The guy's coming in on Monday with his wife and kid. And sure enough, I went home. And when I came in on Monday, I was beating my chest. I was ready. I could handle anything. And this guy came in, and he came in with his wife and his daughter. And I said, what's the reason why they're denying you the benefit? He said, well, because I fell asleep at the wheel. I ruined their payload. And I said, that's not a basis to deny the claim. I'm gonna file a claim petition. I'm going to file a penalty. And
didn't
all
you say
stuff.
It was no sleeping on the job? That's what they said to me?
Well, we got to court, and this is my first case. And we get to court, and we're in front of Judge Marty Weinberg. You remember him?
I do.
A great guy. I'm in front of Judge Marty Weinberg. It's my first case. And in the middle of the direct examination of my client, I think I'm doing a great job. The judge stops the hearing, and there's all these people in the gallery just listening to us. And he said, all right, I want everybody out of here. I want the claimant to go out with his wife and daughter, and I want to talk to the attorneys alone. And I thought, holy moly, I'm in big trouble. I did something wrong because I was in the middle of taking this guy's direct examination. Everybody leaves, and he starts yelling at the other lawyer. He said, what the hell's wrong with you and your client? Why is this claim not picked up? What is the defense here? The other attorney said he violated a positive work order. And I'm thinking, oh, I don't remember, but what is a positive work order? And then I said, what's the positive work order? He said, Your Honor, he slept while he was driving. You're not allowed to sleep while you're driving. And the judge looked at him and said, you mean to tell me you're defending based upon an act that he couldn't control? He said, well, he could have controlled it. He could have pulled over and slept. He said, no, this is the most ridiculous defense I've ever heard. It's a no-fault act. And he said to me, Mr. Gross, you complete your evidence. You take all the depositions you need, and then we'll see what happens in the end. So, of course, I took every deposition there was, funded, of course, by the firm. And at the end of the day, we won. We got the sun, the moon, the stars. Everything was given to us. They were so grateful, these people. They came in. The daughter had baked all kinds of cookies and whatever. And I was really, really impressed with it. And I decided, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life.
And what's amazing about it is, and this is not, Jeff Gross has told this story many times, and you was his mentor. And to me, and we're going to talk about the Legends of Labor Hall of Fame coming up, because ironically speaking, at the Legends of Justice Hall of Fame, which is an offset of Legends of Labor, you two were, out of six people in the entire region, were selected by a really pretty much esteemed panel. And so Jeff Gross has said, if he said it once, and it impresses me because I've known you so well for so long, Joe Messer, that you're his mentor and that he attributes a lot of his success to you. And so, I mean, to me, I'm like, man, I know.
I want to tell you about that, Joe. And Joe doesn't even know this because he doesn't know what I'm thinking. But when I worked with Joe, I used to watch him, and he would get up and come into work earlier than I got there. He would stay and stay and stay. He would go downstairs and have a pretzel for lunch, literally a pretzel, come back up, work the rest of the day, go home, do what he had to do. He worked out, had dinner, and he would come back and work more, would leave around 11 o'clock at night. And I thought, that is the most amazing work ethic I've ever seen. I need to do that. And I used to watch him carry his briefcase. He had this big, I used to call it a 747 briefcase. It was a big trial bag. And he would walk in a very deliberate fashion. And he had this swag about him that was just unbelievable. And I watched him, and I wanted to be Joe Messa.
Joe Messa?
Certainly, Jeff, I appreciate that. And Jeff's done a terrific job and been a very successful lawyer since then. Any little bit that could be attributed to me, I don't know that I deserve it, but I certainly appreciate it and respect it. But let me say this. He at least did pick up my work ethic going home that weekend and reading the Purdon statutes and details to come back. Now, I do remember the case, nowhere near with the detail that Jeff does, but certainly I appreciated his work and his work ethic and the fact that he followed my lead in some respect, but he's certainly taken off and done an amazing job in his practice since then.
And so that lets me kind of segue. We have Marla Joseph on the line. Hey, Marla, how are you?
Hey, great. What's this about pretzels?
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, if that's what it took to be successful, I'd be a multimillionaire right now because I have way more than one pretzel.
a day?
Well, it depends what day it is. I had a couple the other day. If they could get rid of those pretzel stores that you have on Sansom Street. My wife, she'll go get her hair done, and there I am. So, but that's between us. Yeah. So
don't tell her.
I won't say a damn word. By the way, yeah. So, having said that, it does thrill me because I have known Marla for a long time and done a lot of radio with her, of course, with Joe and Jeff Gross. And you may not be as much aware of this, DJ, but we started an initiative, okay, based on our Legends of Labor Hall of Fame, okay? We put together an amazing board, okay? And really a non-biased board, okay? And to my absolute elation, I was doing the vote. Like, this was like a 6-month process. And these individuals all nominated, but then we went into a voting process. And I was thrilled because I happened to know the three is, and I'm like, I'm not involved in the voting. I'm in the because I'm the executive director of with Philly Labor of the Legends of Labor. I also am with the Legends of Justice, and I can honestly say not only was there no bias, there was probably risk put into some of the voting. People were voting for their own for their own competitors, and. I don't, Joe, you and I have go way back and we've done a lot of shows together. We talk a lot of sports, some politics. And to a person, that board, when it came down to the final three, Marla, the same exact situation. And Marla and I, have done a lot of radio together, and Jeff Gross as well. So I was jumping up and down. But I want to read something out loud to all three of you is because you may not know about the mission of what's going on. And something that means a lot to me is somebody who had an injured workers program with the labor unions, okay, is the contingent fee agreement. Okay, that makes people like me, regular people out there who could never, we talked about the afford a work comp attorney, a personal injury attorney, because it's a catch-22. I'm out of work. I can't, okay, it gives me the opportunity to have a great defense, a great lawyer. So this is...
levels the playing field, Joe, between everyday people, someone who's hurt, whether in a car accident, work, medical negligence, or otherwise, to be able to take on the huge corporations, the insurance industry, or the medical industry.
And it's amazing. And so here is my, initiated by Philly Labor, the Philly Labor Injured Workers Advocacy Program, the Lawyer to Lawyer Network, and the Legends of Labor Hall of Fame Initiative. The Legends of Justice Hall of Fame Initiative has been launched to honor and recognize those attorneys and firms who at the highest level have represented clients, including injured workers and personal injury victims, with dedication, compassion, and excellence, and in the process made a lasting impact on working families, their community, and the legal profession. In addition, the Legends of Justice Hall of Fame Initiative strives to better educate the general public, okay, including working men and women, of their rights and responsibilities, while also spotlighting the premier legal professionals who have set the standards of representation in order to inspire and develop the next generation of attorneys and firm owners and partners, okay? To me, that's incredibly important. I do this, you know, the legal radio, and every day, speaking, we watch a lot of the ball games. Because, and every day we see, we hear about the Rodgers rate and all those things. Those guys don't even know what. And every day, you have insurance companies in the law and in the halls of justice requiring, okay, legislation. But when the little guy goes to use it, they shut them down like there's no tomorrow. And so it's an honor for me, okay, to be a part of this initiative, okay? It's the same with labor and the heroes that we have that are the legends, okay, of our labor movement in Philadelphia and beyond. And this was stemmed from our Friends of Labor initiative. So I want to congratulate the three of you because on our board of directors, and I think the three of you know who our board of directors are, it's no joke. There was, like, in other words, I told you before, it's an honor. Marla, I wanted to kind of get your take on this because I was elated when I saw you. You were the first one, and I saw Jeff a couple months ago. I didn't talk to Joe until last week, but we all did shows together, so I couldn't want to tell you. But I couldn't wait to tell you is because I was seeing you. But talk about that a little bit and the passion you have for what you do every day.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I'm sorry if I'm crashing, Jeff, but Jeff's a good friend of mine, so I think he's okay with it.
I'm honored and humbled.
But thank you. But so, and Joe, I'm sure you meant no offense by it at all, but when you had just found out the results, you said to me, I can't believe it. You were consistently in the top three, and I didn't even tell anybody to consider diversity. And I'm sure you meant nothing by that, but like that's kind of what I'm proud of most. Like I think sometimes today, people feel like they need to make decisions on these things based on diversity, and that's important. But I think you were trying to say that this was just based on your lawyering alone, and that makes it even more of a compliment, if that makes any sense. But I will say, representing injured workers, I'm in the minority. There's not a lot of women that own their own firms that do what I do. And I think I had to take the philosophy of eating soft pretzels and not much else and just, pulling in the hours to make it happen. And I think what guided me all along was just the passion for the injured workers. And my father motivated me because he was a lawyer and I saw him fighting for justice. And so it's an honor and, it's great to be in this space. And it's also great to be with Jeff. Jeff and I, we're joking, but we are really good friends. And the bar itself, what's so nice about the workers' comp bar, is that we do honor our colleagues that are competitors because we're confident in our own abilities and we want to reward others that are doing good work.
We're on the same team is the way I like to look
exactly.
at it. I need to give a shout out about Marla real quick. Marla, having nothing to do with diversity at all, in her own right, she has taken the lead on something called Kids Chance. You ever hear of Kids Chance, Joe?
I might have from Marla on one of our shows.
I want Marla to talk about it, but I want to just tell you what she's done. She has basically, from my perspective, spearheaded Kids Chance in Pennsylvania and has turned it into what it is for our sub-industry, workers' compensation. She and I are both on the board, but she really has taken this ball and ran with it. Kids Chance is an organization that basically provides scholarships for catastrophically injured people's kids. So when you get hurt at work, if you die as a result of a work injury or you are catastrophically injured, your child will be helped through this organization for a college scholarship. And she's so instrumental in turning this organization into what it is today and allowing our sector, workers' compensation, to use it as our main charity to help these kids.
Well, Marla, you know, that says everything about you. And obviously giving back is such an important part of what our trial lawyers do. But talk about how much that means to you.
Sure. So when I was chair of the workers' comp section, I learned that our section we'd always supported Kids Chance. It's in our bylaws that we give them $5,000 a year. But there was an opening on the board, and I couldn't believe no one else wanted it. I said, I'm in. So that kind of started this journey for me, because meeting the kids, when you start out on the board, you're on the committee that meets the kids. And it just so happens that the first student I met, and the kids are from all over Pennsylvania, but the first student I met was from Ben Salem, grew up near where my mom grew up. So we met in person. She was in Catholic school wearing this cute little Catholic school outfit. And now she is this amazing dynamo who is applying for law schools and actually worked for me one summer. And so what I've tried to do, I mean, the money we give out is incredible. We just hit the 3 million mark. We've been in operation for about 27 years. We recently had the 25th anniversary gala. This year we gave out $190,000 in scholarships,
wow,
which is our highest number. I went to the National Kids Chance event, and the only state that beat us in terms of the money that they gave out was California. And when you compare the size of the states, it just really, we're like number one, in my opinion.
Sure.
And we've become a role model for the states, you know, all over the country. So, yeah, I mean, I have such a passion for it. And we're kind of moving into next level now. My goal now is, the money's great, but really, the way you get your start in life with a career is through connections and mentorship.
Exactly.
And so we're kind of trying to start a program where we match the kids up to people in their fields that they desire to be in, and, you know, really help them to get to that next level of success.
Well, listen, we commend you on that. That's fantastic. It says a lot about who you are, and obviously, you know, a big part of why you're being honored. And I will say this, I'm gonna read the honorees, because this is a Mount Rushmore. This is no joke. And some of them have not been notified, two or three, but I'm gonna take a shot to say that this is not letting the cat out of the bag. Okay, so we have two categories, Legends of Labor and Justice. Okay, and when the Legends of Labor is a union focused thing that and so Sam Pond was inducted last year. This year, Bob Mongaluzzi and Larry Bendesky and Jerry Lee Hockey. The Legends of Justice category, and we've not notified Klein Inspector yet, but they have been selected. George Martin, Bernie Smalley, Marla Joseph, Jeffrey Gross, and Joe Messa. Okay, and I was excited when I was talking to you. I probably was, because I wasn't saying that I couldn't believe it. I was just saying that I'm so close to three, and there's 10,000 lawyers, if not way more, in this initiative. And so We appreciate you calling in, Marlo. Obviously, we congratulate you. We can't wait to do your and Jeff's ceremony. One of the things we do is a broadcast. We do it with the Legends of Labor. We don't put 12 people in a room and do a 500-person banquet because we're trying to educate the public also on our advocacy for labor and for justice. You see the insurance company, commercials all the time pushing back and pushing down. We do individual ceremonies and broadcasts because we're trying to educate the general public and in the union community, our next generation of labor leaders, and in justice, obviously the next generation of attorneys. And we want to educate the public and those who are in those fields to understand, obviously, who sets the standard. So we appreciate you calling in. Obviously, we want to congratulate you, and I can't
wait. Thank you so much.
It's our pleasure. Can't wait to do the this ceremony. Marlo Joseph,
looking
everybody.
Forward to it. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And so, you know, very, very excited about that. A lot of work put in. I also want to thank the board members, the selection committee, Bob Zimmerman, Sonny Banks, J.B. Dilsheimer, Jennifer Gomez-Hardy, Frank Saprero. No politics, and that's what I was so excited about. So having said that, we have about 10 minutes left. And I want to talk about, and Jeff Gross, this is, you know, we had talked about this, an honor that Joe Mesa has just received that is one of the most prestigious honors in the legal profession. Jeff, if you would.
Yeah, Joe just won the annual Musmano Award, which is an incredible honor to have as a trial attorney. It is the most prestigious trial lawyer honor in Philadelphia. It's given out by the Philadelphia Trial Lawyers Association, which Joe was the president of, and did an amazing job and is so active in that organization, among other organizations. But to his credit, he has taken that organization and improved it to such an extent and has helped the little guy, the injured worker or the injured victim, for his entire career, and has risen to such a level that I could not think of a more appropriate honor to give to him. And I am just absolutely impressed and but the best word that I could think of is I'm not surprised. I'm absolutely amazed though at what he's done. And it's so well deserving, and I want to congratulate you, Joe, again on receiving that. It's a wonderful honor, and I'm very proud of you.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate it, and you know I'm not a guy that looks for accolades or frankly, during some of the ceremony, I don't know if you noticed this, but it makes me very uncomfortable when people are up there talking about me in a very sort of congratulatory or I don't know the exact word, but the way people talk about me makes me uncomfortable. I'm sitting up there and, Larry and Ezra, two of my contemporaries, are saying all these glowing things about me. It makes me very uncomfortable.
So let's look at it a different way.
I don't do anything for...
Right. Let's look at it a different way. When I listened to your acceptance speech, I was absolutely inspired is the best word I could give. Your words are inspirational to me, and not just to me, but to everyone who listened to it. It's not necessarily a congratulatory thing, although, yes, congratulations. You evoke this inspiration that is conveyed upon anyone that listens to you and makes me, a practitioner, a workers' compensation practitioner, want to be better than I already am. And I strive to do what you do. And when I hear the words that come out of your mouth in that acceptance speech and in a daily discussion that you have with me anytime you talk, it inspires me. And that's why it's so well-deserving.
Well, it's real, right? It's something I believe in my gut. It's something I believe in my heart. It's something that's part of me that I was raised with to take care of and represent and do my best for victims and those people who are less fortunate or underprivileged or have been harmed, the little guy that's being screwed by big business or corporate America or the healthcare profession or whatever it may be, and that's just part of who I am. So I mean, I live for that. I want to fight for that. You know, unlike Joe, when I grew up as a kid in Germantown, when I was out in the streets fighting because I liked to fight, or because that was something that you had to do at the time, or that, you know, whatever. I liked to fight when I was a kid too, when played sports, you know, like you did. It's enabled me to funnel that energy into a more constructive and positive way, but also that's part of who I am and what I believe in. And, you know, it motivates me to get up every day and work hard for these people who need help.
Well, the passion, you know, you talked, here's a funny thing. Here's a good example. So Joe grew up in Germantown somebody from the neighborhood who worked his butt off, but also an athlete, somebody who's worked a lot of, we've had those conversations about those when, you know, the benefits of athleticism doesn't 99.9% of the people aren't going pro, but they're going pro into something else. And this is a great example, but we were on a show once. Remember Murph called my buddy?
Oh, yeah.
Murph. So like one of my best friends calls me up and he's like, yo, tell Joe Mess I said hello. Right. We called the show or definitely was texting me. Right. And, like, these are guys that are hardworking, blue-collar, I mean, gritty guys, okay? And Joe's represents, obviously, those people. But taking all that grit and everything that you learned in the street and of course, in the business world, and bringing it to your clients on a daily basis, what it does for me, it's just who you are. Like, in other words, am I right or wrong about that? I mean,
well, Joe, one thing that's important to me and I try to live my life by is never forget where you came from, right? It doesn't matter how successful you are or what you do in the law practice or anything else. To me, just be real. Don't forget where you came from. These people who you represent are like your family. They're just as important. You need to fight for them like you would fight for your family. And sometimes, I hate to say it, I think there are people who become successful in life, whatever it may be, whether it's trawlers or otherwise, and sort of lose sight of that.
Well, let me ask you this question. I wanted to do this show, okay? And I appreciate DJ coming on board and making it happen. But I will say this. I wanted, you know, because Jeff spoke so highly of you, and then here we are, okay? I mean, and I wanted to talk about, you know, the honors that were at the table, but I wanted to get you guys in the same room. When you're representing somebody, okay, what keeps the fire in both of you, okay? In other words, you talk about being successful and all those things, but I mean, you guys could probably, you know, hit the trail anytime you want, but yet you wake up today and you're as passionate today as you were probably the first day. What keeps that fire burning?
It's really easy to just do being a lawyer as a rote matter of existence where you're just going through the motions. No different than anybody else. People are people. And the human condition is that you get kind of tired and you get caught up and, you know, you tend to lose your inspiration or your fire, as you just put it, when you're representing people, because it's no different than anything else. But every once in a while, something lights that fire or keeps that fire lit, whether it be when you're in your early years, you're a true believer or you need the money and you're really working hard to help your clients so you can help yourself. Whatever the basis of that fire is, as you get older, that becomes less important, and the more important thing is the core for which you've started out on this journey, which is helping the little guy. And what keeps that fire burning in me is my grandfather and his legacy to me. When I was a kid, when I graduated, I called myself a kid, when I graduated law school, my grandfather said to me, Jeff, he called me Jeffy, you could do anything you want to do. You could go into corporate law, you could be a divorce lawyer, you could do all that stuff. You could be a class action lawyer, medical malpractice lawyer. It's the little guy that needs your help. And my grandfather was an assembly line worker for 40 years for Bond Bread. You remember Bond Bread?
Yeah, of course.
And Bond Bread—
Joe, you're too young to remember that.
Oh, yeah.
40 years on Rising Sun Avenue. And one day in the 50s, this one woman who was not wearing a hairnet got her hair caught up in the assembly line process, and it pulled her scalp right off.
Ugh.
And my grandfather grabbed her hair and her scalp and ran her to his car, went to the ER at Albert Einstein Medical Center, and he waited 5 hours for them to sew her scalp back on, all bloody. Afterwards, he went back to the plant and said, "We got to help this woman. She's really messed up." And they looked at him and they said, "Nope, she's fired. She wasn't wearing a hairnet. She's good." Not only did she not get any money, but she was let go from her job and she was done. And that, in the 1950s, they didn't do anything about this most of the time. And so that inspired me, and he is the one that gives me the fire in my belly to continue to do what I'm doing.
Awesome story. Jeff, Joe, we got about a minute left, if you would. What keeps you going?
Well, I would start with saying, Joe, I don't know any other way to be. Like, this is just who I am, and it's never going to change. In addition to that, like Jeff said, there are people out there who need our help, and when you see someone who has lost a child or a loved one or has had their whole world ripped apart because of someone's negligence or a defective product, it just makes me angry, right?
Yeah.
And it makes me want to fight, and it makes me want to do the best I can for those people. And it's part of who I am. It's the way I've always been. And look, 36 plus years I've been doing this, I'm not changing now. And I'll never forget where I came from.
DJ, if you would, you're part of the process. How does it make you feel when somebody, and in your world, they're lost? In other words, they may be in huge trouble. They may be smoked out of this thing. How does it make you feel when you can help?
I think I told you the story in the past. We had a woman call in that was going to lose her home, and child services were going to come pick up her kids if, you know, she didn't get the funds to, you know, pay her mortgage and things like that. And we were able to come in and help her out and pay those bills, and she was eternally grateful for us. And we still get, you know, calls every single day for people we helped 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago that are, you know, very grateful for us.
Contact information?
Just covbridgecap.com.
Awesome. Jeff Gross, contact information for you at the firm?
Call me on my cell phone anytime. I give out my cell number to everyone, 215-512-1500.
Joe Messick, contact information at the firm?
215-568-3500 is the phone number, and messalaw.com is the email, MESSALAW.
Awesome. Listen, I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Jeff Gross Show here on WWDB Talk 86. I want to thank Joe Messa for making it happen, and also DJ Kepler for actually making this show happen. We really appreciate it. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.